What's going on, everybody? More bad news for Boeing. God, how do we trade this thing? We can take a look and see if there's anything that interests us at all. Uber and Instacart teaming up. That's right. Batman and Robin. Why are they doing it? We can discuss what the deal is there. And then finally, what happens if the Fed decides not to cut? What are we going to do? Well, we can think about all those things. So we'll talk about those three things and more. We'll take a look at some of the earnings that are coming up and really just kind of sit here and watch paint dry as the market is really not doing a whole lot today, just like yesterday. But first, welcome to the most dangerous show on the Tasty Live Network. Folks, it's Engineering the Trade. I'm your host, Jamal Chandler. As you have noticed, I am on a little earlier. I usually come on at 1:45 Central Time to 2:15. Today, you got me for 15 minutes extra, folks. 1:30 to 2:15, that's right. It's a power 45 minutes. It doesn't rhyme like the same way power hour does, but, you know, whatever. We'll make it work. So, listen, jump in the chat. Ask me some questions. We'll hang out. We'll talk more. I got a bunch of stuff to show you. I put together a little bit of extra content since it's just me. I don't want to make you bored at all. Anybody watching playoffs right now? I was shocked last night. I mean, like most people, that Minnesota beats Denver two times at home. I can't tell you how surprised I am. I mean, that's, wow, that's really surprising. To see the last year champion down 2-0 at home in a divisional round. This is, if you're betting on a comeback, if you want to bet on a comeback, this is one comeback to bet on. It could go seven, who knows? But it's very shocking to see them lose their first two games. So that's going to be a series to watch, clearly. The more time goes on, the more everybody's going to talk about this Anthony Edwards kid, man. Everybody's already kind of comparing him to Jordan. He's incredibly quick, and when he's on the court, I tell you, when you watch him and you see it, that's the best thing about playoffs. You get to see players that you normally don't see. And I'm going back and forth between that and hockey playoffs. Look, I don't really watch much in the regular season in hockey, especially when the Blackhawks are not good. But playoff hockey is always a whole different animal, man. I mean, you can see people going at it in a different way. So that's been fun to watch, too. I was watching a little bit of that Bruins game last night. But, yeah, I can't take my eyes off this kid, this Anthony Edwards kid, man. He is doing it up. So that's the series to watch. Keep your eyes on that. Let's pull up some slides. Let's talk about things. Again, hey, I'm here for an extra 15 minutes. So we got bunches of time. You got interesting stuff about the markets to ask or to talk about. You got trades you want to share. You got trades you want to look at. We can dive into all of that. Mr. Premium, why'd the market sell off? Honestly, I wouldn't even call this a sell-off. I mean, sell-off is such a strong word to use on a day when there's really no volume. And that's really the key here. I mean, we're at 795,000 contracts on the ES. We're usually at a million by midday. Obviously, we're past midday at this point, and we're only at 795. That tells you it's a very it's a weak market in terms of volume. And so when you have low volume, it is what it is. We're going to have days like this. So Boeing got hit with another investigation, this time around the 787 Dreamliner. Look, there's been a lot of issues. First of all, let's just talk about it from the standpoint of flying. How safe does this make you feel? Not very. not very at all, right? When you're hearing all these different issues about Boeing planes. And they've been so safe, save for the last 5 years when we started to hear more of these issues. It makes you wonder. I mean, look, Boeing now is trading 176 and changed, way off of the highs that we saw just 6 months ago. And it was really gaining some steam for a while there after such a bad 2019, 2020, 2021, really gained some steam. Stock was on the way back up, and now all these issues more recently. I tell you what, it makes it hard to – I know vol is a little bit elevated, and I say a little bit because it was a lot higher maybe a month or change ago. It makes it hard to trade. I mean, do you really want to sell downside and then more news comes out again and then, you know, goes further down and then your short puts are in the money, you're losing money there. Do you really want to sell upside in that all of a sudden they say, you know, something, the investigations lighten up. Then you get a short squeeze to the upside and you're screwed then too. So I don't know, man. I got to tell you, for me, it's kind of a no trade right now. There's a lot of other things out there that are at least, I mean, that are probably beleaguered that you would rather trade. This thing just seems to have some new news come out every 3 weeks to a month. I don't get it. And it sucks when you're trading something for vol purposes and there's news behind it. There's nothing worse than that. It's one thing if it's news for a whole sector, but this is very isolated news just for this singular name. I guess I'm saying, honestly, you should just get out. There's better things to do. There's better things to trade. Probably just close and move on. I know a lot of you probably got a position you might be underwater on. You've been having for a while. You've been trying to decide what to do. I just don't think it's worth it. I really don't think it's worth it right now. I don't see the point. Why would you want to put yourself through the misery? So I think it's better to just close and move on. When you have this much news coming out of nowhere all the time on one singular stock, move on to the next thing. Uber and Instacart, they struck up a partnership recently, and it's one where that you'll now be able to order from Uber Eats on Instacart. And they'll provide you. And again, within the Instacart app, you'll be able to order some Uber Eats stuff. And I think they're going to do a little swapsies on groceries as well with Instacart. But the essential thing is here, they're clearly teaming up. It's not a merger. Not a merger. They're teaming up. The two are teaming up forces basically probably to go after DoorDash, which is the number one, right? I mean, DoorDash has been holding it down in the number one spot for a while. And these two are doing well, surviving, I would say, pretty well. I mean, again, Uber, I think, has earnings tonight. We'll get to hear a little bit more about them on that front. I feel like the Eat business is actually one of the things that's really propped them up well, especially coming out of the pandemic, right? That's something that's been huge. How many of you order your groceries? You know, that's a good thing. That's a good thing for a poll. I'm curious about that. How many people do you order groceries for delivery? Because I really didn't do that too often until more recently. For delivery. Yes, no. There's no maybe so. Just curious. We recently started doing that over the last couple of months. Saves a lot of time. Not going to lie to you. I mean, there's so many times where we all kind of have a similar schedule and always end up at the store at the same time, say Sunday, right? And there's so many people in line, or you wait it out, right? You wait it out and you go on the off days, whether you go Sunday night or you go, you know, on a random Tuesday, and everything is just not there like you want it to be because everything's already been bought up. Delivery kind of at least helps eliminate that to some degree. Now, they don't always have everything you want, but I tell you what, it saves a lot of trouble. And I mean, there's nothing better than the feeling of like your house full of groceries, right? I mean, that's the best thing. There is some kind of satisfaction to that after you've gone out and get groceries. It's like hunting in a way. You go out, you get the kill, and you bring it home, and you celebrate, and you deserve it. It's the same thing with groceries. You go out, you get the groceries, you bring them home, you stack it up, put everything away. It's like, it's so relaxing. It's like one of those best things. So, just curious, how many of you deliver groceries? Finally, what happens if the Fed doesn't cut? We've had a lot of discussion this year about Fed cut rate odds, Fed rate cut odds, I should say. There's been a lot of discussion about that. As a matter of fact, you could argue between, besides AI, that's been one of the narratives that has ruled the market the most, right? Late last year, November, after the November Fed meeting and CPI and jobs report in December, all of a sudden the market was moving higher. Because, well, it was deemed that the market, the economy is doing so well that we'll be able to cut rates. And it seemed like it was a good thing for stocks. Stocks took off. We loved it. Then the beginning of this year, we got a couple of inflation reports that made us feel like inflation is not coming down as fast as we thought or hoped. All of a sudden, market freaks out. Market doesn't like it. Yields go back up. 2-year yield was touching almost 5% a week ago. Remember that? Seems like a lifetime. It was just a week ago that 2-year yields were doing that. And it seemed as though all these different narratives were coming in. Well, GDP came in. It was lighter than we expected. All of a sudden, stagflation might be an issue. All of a sudden, inflation is still existing. Economy slowing down. These were all things that we were really worried about very recently with regard to rates. And so you got to wonder what happens if we don't cut rates. I mean, well, first of all, Not cutting rates creates an issue, or I should say keeps an issue going with credit card delinquencies or those who are carrying balances on a credit card across month to month. Those rates are very high. When you're talking about buying homes, right? We've seen a lot of home data that has actually been better than expected over the last couple of months. But still, when you have home data that is coming in not so great because rates are high and people aren't necessarily clamoring to leave their current house to try to get a new house with a worse rate, that's going to leave things a little bit stagnant, right? So there's that. And then there's also auto loans. Now, you know, auto loans is one where, I mean, if people aren't taking out auto loans, it's not the worst thing in the world. People do that based off of their own individual situation, right? I mean, if you need an auto, you need it to get from A to B, work to home. Well, then you take that loan out and you get it. But man, those are fairly high these days when you look at the averages. I mean, about 14% for used cars, 9% for new cars. I mean, those are pretty high. And as long as we're not cutting rates, those are going to stay the same. And there's a lot of people who have gotten cars in the last few years, more so in the 2020, 21, 22 than now, I would say, the last 2 years. But still, those who are getting cars, get them at pretty elevated rates. And so as long as the Fed's not cutting those, that's when you get into a situation where there's not all of a sudden retail sales not looking good. All of a sudden, GDP, two-thirds of consumer spending, consumers a little bit squeezed, and we're going to hear the whole stagflation thing again if rates stay elevated. So that's the real fear here. That's what we've seen and what we saw like last week or so in markets. That fear dissipated. But if the Fed doesn't cut rates, that's why you see the market react the way that it does anytime we have that conversation come up. That being the case, it would seem as though one or two rate cuts will go a long way into pacifying the market. But until we actually get it, feels like we're in the middle of a range, so don't get too carried away with all your bullish bets. Leftovers, tablet sales dropped to the lowest level since 2011. Let's move to the next slide. I see you guys in the chat. I see you guys with your questions. I'm going to get to those when we get to the platform in a little bit. This is the estimated worldwide tablet shipment over the last 13 years. Pretty simple story. Tablets, right? I mean, it's funny, Apple just came out with their event today, right? They introduced new tablets. Boy, they're not cheap at all. I'm trying to remember what some of these numbers are. Tablets. Let me see. Apple tablets. they came out with one with a pen. Didn't they already have one with a pen? I don't know, man. I tell you. Good Lord. Was it a tablet event? Where's the news? Yeah, I mean, they just came out with, I don't know, some of these new tablets. I heard the top end one was like $2,400, almost $2,500. Like, really? For a tablet? Who uses those? Actually, that's my next slide. But when you look at this, seems like we reached a peak in 2014, a little over 200 million tablets. We're currently at 128 million. As a matter of fact, this is the least amount since 2011. So looking at a downtrend, interesting that we saw the downtrend beginning in 2014, 2015, 2016, but it really seems to be at a certain level now. I mean, again, this was last year. We had 128 and a half. So it's not looking good for tablets. And if we let's move to the next slide, because I found this really compelling. This is... It shows you that tablets are kind of optional. This is a share of respondents in selected countries who use a smartphone or tablet. China, 97% of people, and you can see all of these for smartphones. They rule the world. They have all of our information. We're all screwed, but that's another story. Upwards of 90% in every country, right? China, Germany, UK, whatever. But the amount of tablet use is interesting. In China, 65% of the people use a tablet, versus some of the other countries, right? They're the highest. Next is Germany, 55%, not as much. UK, 55%. 50% in South Korea. Gets to 49% in the US, so basically a coin flip. France, less than that, 46%. India, 44%. And then Japan, only 28% of people have tablets, or I should say in the country, in this survey anyway, about 2,000 people. So, you know, and you imagine this is representative. I mean, for example, in our house, we do have one. Actually, my youngest kid, who's 11, he has two tablets. I mean, one is for school and one is for play. And he's always kind of had a tablet. He's always been into it. Doesn't have a cell phone yet. It's kind of the way we communicate him with the most when we're out of the house. We actually FaceTime him on the tablet, right? But I tell you, I've had a tablet once. I think I kind of got it given to me, sort of. I don't even remember. It was a Samsung tablet. It was some years. It was probably like 2014, 2015 I had one. But they've never really been my thing. I don't know. I'm just not a tablet person. I've always had a smartphone, mostly because I have to, right? I mean, you kind of have to now. But it's just really interesting. Not many people are into tablets like that. Go figure. Let's move ahead to the next slide. Okay, interesting chart here. This is, excuse me, gets to, a little drink here. This gets to somewhat of my question I was asking earlier, what happens if the Fed doesn't cut? This is not about cuts, it's more about pauses. So a lot of people think that, you know, us holding rates steady is bad for the economy, and that's probably true, like based off of what I just said, right? With home loans, with credit cards, with auto loans. But think about markets, right? The way that we reacted more recently to the fact that we weren't getting any Fed rate cuts, you would think the market doesn't like it, but au contraire, mon frère. The S&P 500 has been positive 6 out of 10 times during Fed pauses. So you can see, and it's not in order, but you can see in the 1981 period, in the 1989 period, the 1995 period, 2006, 2018, and now, those 6 times, market has been positive, right? Whereas the other times it was negative, probably for different reasons. I mean, early 1980 was not the greatest time in the economy and the market. Mid-70s as well. 84, I can't speak for. I would assume 84 would have been good, but it's interesting, right? And then, of course, 2001, I mean, that was a part where the time period where the market was experiencing a sell-off after what was going on in tech. But 6 times the market has been positive during these areas where the Fed holds rates steady, right? Currently, we're amidst the longest pause, or I should say the second longest Fed pause at 280 days right now. Market's up a little more than 12%, and so things have been going fairly decently, right? Even though we're paused, even though we're not cutting rates on the regular, market seems to be okay with it. And so I'm just saying, if we don't get a Fed rate cut, doesn't necessarily mean the market's gonna tank. I know that's what the market would have had you believe a couple of weeks ago, but believe it or not, that's the case. Let's move to the next slide. Another interesting one. Look at the S&P 500 returns around the Fed hiking cycle. Yes, when the Fed hikes, most of the time, market has done well. When the last hike comes, similar deal. Last hike stops, Fed rates from going higher. Look where we are right now in that range of when this was done at the time. This is an interesting chart. So I wanted to clip it. 9 months after we've had our last hike, we're at, you know, 10 to 12%, right? And most of the time, we've seen this in other regimes, we've been higher as well, except for 99-2000, which again, dot-com era was a little bit weird. But 2004-2005, we were higher 9 months later. In 88-89, we were higher 9 months later. 2015-2018, same deal. 83-84, same deal. 94-95, same deal. And as a matter of fact, you can go further out to 2 years after the fact. Well, most of them market ended up being higher. 04-06, market stumbled a little bit, but it was still positive. 99 to 2000 was the only time that we did not do well after Fed pauses. So just saying, Fed pause and holding here is not the worst thing for stocks, even if it's not necessarily great for the economy. Something to think about. Let's move ahead to the next slide. Move index has really calmed down, which is a good thing. Usually leads to calmer volatility in equity markets. And as you can see, with a VIX of 13 and change, we have very calm equity markets. Last time we were this low, well, was the end of last year and the beginning of this year, earlier in March, it was this low. But of course, going back to September of last year was the last time. Other than that, move index has been fairly elevated for some time. So, yeah, it's a good thing to see the move index down. Treasury vol has calmed down quite a bit. And as you can see, we're getting some stability in the bonds. Let's move to the next slide. So, again, equity vol, pretty low. It's pretty low right now, as it should be. I mean, you know, we had big moves last week. We had a lot of things that were resolved last week. I mean, Powell coming out and saying that we're not expecting rate hikes is a good thing. We don't need things to get higher because, again, that's going to exacerbate the process for the economy. Even if it stamps out inflation, you can kill inflation, right? You can light a house on fire to get rid of termites, but you might get rid of the house too. We don't really want to get rid of the house. But things have calmed down volatility-wise. Looking over the last 4 weeks, this is over the last four Fridays. May 3rd is where we are. Obviously, last Friday in the blue, you can see that this curve is lower than the rest. One thing, of course, that stands out in all of them is the election vol. You can see the election premium being priced into markets. We'll have to wait and see what that volatility ends up looking like. Let's move ahead to the last slide. Oh, geez, I got another. I forgot. Oh, yeah, grains. Have you guys noticed grains have been on the rise more recently? A little bit of vol kicking up in there with corn, wheat, soybeans. I don't have any trades on, but I didn't notice how much they've been on the run more recently. A little quiet today, but something to keep an eye on. I'm not trading any. And actually, vol's in a little bit across the board in almost all of them today, but I'm not trading any. I just thought it was fascinating that all of these grains have been on the run more recently. So something to keep in mind. Let's move ahead to the next slide. This is the last one. Earnings. Rivian. I've already seen people in the chat talking about Rivian. You got Wynn. You got Upstart. You got Lyft. Twilio. Oxy. Of course, everybody's favorite, Reddit. I don't know why. Uber. Shopify. AFRM. Toyota. And Trip. Really not much on the calendar, folks. You got the UK Bank of England rate decision coming up on Thursday. I don't imagine they're going to do anything policy-wise, but they've been chomping at the bit to cut rates. I think the interesting thing will be just to pay attention to any rhetoric that they have. Number of S&P 500 stocks above the 50-day moving average, 259. We're like right in the middle of a range. It's so interesting how this metric works. I'm telling you, 51% of stocks are over their 50-day moving average. I feel like we're in the middle of the recent range that we've been trading in, right? Right around 5,200. So we're not at all-time highs. We're not near lows. We're just in the middle of a range. Something to keep in mind. Let's move to the platform. Okay. I don't have vol on my screen. Maybe I should add it. How can your name be Mr. Premium and you don't have vol on your screen? Volume? What do you mean? I wasn't sure what you're talking about. So, B. Brawlson, what are my thoughts on premium selling? Wheel strategy and SLV. I see. You want to sell puts in SLV. First of all, the wheel strategy is one of the greatest. It's like the greatest thing since the wheel. I mean, it really is. We simplify it a lot in the way that we talk about it, right? Like we talk about, go ahead and just sell a put, and when it gets in the money, you'll be able to buy the stock and then sell calls against it. But honestly, the best thing about a wheel strategy that really happens, if you're lucky, is that it never gets to a wheel. You just end up selling a put and it moves away from your strike and so on and so forth. I'm actually doing that right now in NVO. It's one of my stocks that I'm selling puts in. But yeah, it's. I think it's a great idea. I mean, what specifically are you looking at? And are you looking at getting short? The one thing you always keep in mind, it's kind of semantics, I will tell you. And I'm assuming you must be thinking about selling something closer to at the money or even in the money. That's why you asked the question, which I totally get. I understand. Always keep in mind when you're selling downside in metals, particularly gold and silver, I mean, it's really not a whole lot of high vol. Most of this implied vol rank, I just got to tell you, that's coming in, that's showing it's above 30, is really from the upside, right? Because metals crash up. Because usually people reach out to buy metals in times of stress, if you will, especially gold. So, nevertheless, I think if you want to sell it, go right ahead. Is that you on the offer right there? Is that you selling? Let's see. Ask a size. Is that one person? You ever do this? So you can look at an ask size if you've never really paid attention in markets or you're still learning and figuring out markets. Ask size lets you know how much is on the ask. And currently I know somebody was selling this because it's only a penny wide. Somebody was selling this. They're trying to sell 16 of them. See how on the other ones, there's a huge amount of size here. Oh, there they go. They just got cleared out. They just got cleared out of their position. There they go. Happens. So yeah, no, I think it's a great idea. Go ahead and sell your put in SLV and hopefully you'll turn it into a wheel. James Bond IV. Hi, Jamal. Are you watching Netflix? Yeah. What am I watching on Netflix? Oh, currently. Just finished watching what show was that? Ripley. Couldn't stop talking about it. Very good show. Very beautifully shot. Largely, I think it's all in black and white. Very, very beautiful show. Very cool. Again, it's an adaptation of The Talented Mr. Ripley from, God, what year was that movie? 97 or something? 98? With Matt Damon and Gwyneth Paltrow and, whatever that other dude's name is. I forgot his name. Yeah, it was a good movie. Now, actually, you know what I'm watching now? Not currently. I watched The Roast of Tom Brady, for sure, the other night. Very entertaining, can't lie. I'm not even a roast person. I don't really watch those often, but that was entertaining. Currently watching something on Apple Plus. It's a movie with Colin Farrell, or I should say a series, called Sugar. He's actually this private investigator. Really, really, I kind of like it. It's kind of cool. It's like a film noir, you know what I mean? Like, they really spin it like that, too, and he's like a PI, and he talks to himself on the regular. That one's pretty good. I like watching that. And you just started watching The Last Dance? Oh, you're in for a treat, man. That's a fantastic documentary. Depends on how much you like Michael Jordan. If you love Michael Jordan, you'll love that documentary. If you can't stand him, you're going to hate it even more because it's mostly all about him. I don't know what else to tell you. Any other questions up in here? Thanks. Your first truly naked position in SLV? Okay, cool. Premium-wise, that's a decent one to do. For sure. I mean, it's buying power is not too bad, and it kind of helps you out. It's not too expensive to do, so it's not one that kills you. 35 IVR. I'll join you in it. Which one are you doing? You're doing the, and so keep in mind too, when you sell this, let's just say you're selling this at 86 cents. On the 25 line, your break even is 24.14, right? So that you're effectively getting long SLV at 24.14 as a price. Something to keep in mind when you're doing it. Just so you know. Let's see, any trades that I've done recently that I haven't filled you guys in on? Let's go through the positions here. So right now, I am short because Google is still 31 IVR. I'm short of strangling Google. I'm short June. It's already had earnings. I don't have to worry about that aspect. I'm short the 157.5, 180 strangle. And, cool, BB Carlson. Just to be in with you, buddy, I'm going to do the same thing. I was talking with Chris Vecchio earlier about metals and about getting long, and we've seen something that maybe SLV could be, silver could eventually break out. I'll sell with you, as a matter of fact. I will also embark on this trade. Let's see, 150, 150, do I want to, I will, who's that? Somebody's trying to sell two, see that? Somebody's trying to sell two of these on the ask for 152. Fascinating. I'm going to sell this one. How about that? I'll sell that one with you. And I will put that fill that in at the end of the show and add in my trades. But as you can see, doing live, I sold the 25 put for 86 cents. So currently I'm short Google in the strangle, that 157.5, 180, 31 IVR. I like it, especially with markets being where they are currently. Although this thing is 170. So that's a good area to be in between my strikes. Hopefully it doesn't, the bullishness in the market doesn't get too carried away because obviously Google will run higher. GE is one that I had been looking at too. I actually saw this when stocks was on highs. I usually don't like to sell strangles in a stock that's on its highs in the manner that it is. But it's GE, and I feel reasonably confident. Although, to be fair, GE has become basically like Boeing now. I mean, this is mostly an aerospace stock, right? They've removed all the conglomerate part of it, which actually made it safer to sell Volin at one point in time. Because it did so many different things. It was a very, very stable company. And I'm not saying GE Aerospace is not, but I'm saying now they're susceptible to just things that affect the airline space, if you will, right? Nevertheless, I am short the 155, 175 strangle for the time being, and that's my position. SMH, you know, this is some of the highest vol on the board, right? Like SMH, AMD, a lot of these chip-related stocks and or ETFs. These are some of the highest vol possible. I figured this was a lot more safer than selling AMD by itself or selling NVIDIA by itself. Selling an ETF is always a lot easier to stomach and handle. So I'm short the 200, 235 with stock at 220. Still like it, still feel confident. As a matter of fact, I probably feel confident about this strangle more than any of my other strangles. NVO. So this is a stock that I like. Honestly, this is one that I've been looking at for a while. I think I discussed this a little bit yesterday. This is one where just looking at the current space and what's going on with a lot of the obesity drugs and or, you know, the whole GLP-1 class of drugs is really what it is. I mean, they make two types, right? There's the GLP-1 drugs that are specifically for those who have diabetes, but then they also make weight loss related drugs that use the same kind of formula in a way. I'm just curious about this whole story and what's been going on. And I just see, like, I mean, be honest with you, I don't really say this too often, but I see room for growth. And so I'm playing this to the long side. I figured this was a fairly cheap way to do it instead of buying stock in $127 stock, right? Or calls. Not really interested in buying calls in this thing. But I will say, you know, this is not as high vol as it was when I first sold. I was actually short the 120 until today. I rolled my puts to the 125, so now I'm short this. And so I'm just, you know, playing long the stock, essentially. Stock's been holding in this pattern for a while. We saw it breaking out. I was actually watching this thing at the beginning of the year. And if you watch me, I show up on Tom and Tony's show on Fridays on This Week in Stocks, a little segment that starts around 8 a.m. Central Time, 9 a.m. Eastern. Early in the year, I talked about this. When it was trading around 100, I was really interested in getting long it. I've actually gotten long it in a long-term account, too, in my RARA. And that one I'm using leap calls, though, further out. Much different strategy. But decided I want to sell some puts in the meantime, and so this has become kind of a core position in the portfolio. We'll see how it works out. Micron, this is one I actually kind of messed up. I messed up Micron. I was short Micron. When did I put this position on, actually? I've had it on for some time. Let's see. This is another. You guys ever have this? Sometimes you forget how long you've had something on. You just got to go to where is it? I usually have the days open. Oh, there it is, days open. I've had this position on for, 2 days. It'll be 3 weeks. When is that? Yeah, 3 weeks ago I put this thing on. So, I don't know, probably around here. I actually had it as the time where markets were dropping. I should have taken it off here, and I didn't. And then I've just been riding this wave ever since. And I'm short a call spread. The reason why I sold call spreads is because at the time I had AMD short put. I also had an SMH short put. And so I figured I would offset it by selling call spread in Micron, which is essentially in the same industry, but just doing the opposite. Well, it actually worked out. I just forgot to close it. So I'm holding on for the time being. It's still elevated IVR. Still can hold on to it. There's the SLV that I just put on. The CCL is one that CCL and WBA are kind of the same thing. So both of them, CCL does not have elevated IV, but both of them are on their butt. Both of these stocks, they're both in the S&P 500 and in the NASDAQ 100, by the way, if you didn't know. And so I'm short puts in here in the event that these kind of have a mean reversion at some point in time. Whatever the hell the mean might be for them, I don't know. But CCL and WBA, same deal on both of those. Crocs is a position I had on yesterday. A win for the good guys. We had the, I was long, the, what was I long? The 125. Yeah, I was long the 125 call in this week. And I was short the 40 call in May 10th, right? Near term. So diagonal, 125, 140, most I could make was 15. Ended up being worth $12. I think I bought it for, what did I buy it for? It's right here. I bought it for $5.70. I was able to sell it out for $12.40. So that was a nice little gain, about 120%. I'll take that any day of the week and twice on Sunday. Smack Lovin', Jamal, can you comment on how you're playing NVO and your IRA, your target buying a specific delta? Yeah, so I put it on a while ago. I don't remember exactly my strike off the top of my head. But I'll tell you this. It is Jan 2026. And if you're looking at, I think I'll be on Jan 2026. If you're looking at a leap, you should always be looking at anywhere from 75 delta to 80 delta or higher, if you will. You should treat it like a stock. Like if you're doing one contract, which is, you know, again, that's like 100 shares. It's like buying 100 shares. So it should be a little more in the money, 75, 80 delta, right? So that's what I'm doing in that. I don't remember my exact strike, but let's just say I might have the 90 or 95. I don't remember which one I'm doing. But it's definitely a higher delta. 75 to 80 delta, you usually want to do in something like that. And then eventually, if you're lucky and the stock continues to run, you could turn it into a poor man's covered call if you want. You don't want to be too far out, though. So the stock would really have to run on this in 2026 for me to turn into a poor man's covered call, because the only thing that I could sell against the 2026 is a March 2025, and that's too far removed. You usually want to do a poor man's covered call with like 3 to 6 months difference. You don't want to do like a full year and change. That's a lot. This is 9 months, I think, difference between the Jan 2026, but still, it's quite a bit. That's usually what you want. That's usually kind of how you look at it, just so you know. Yeah, other trades, MCL, I'm still long this from 79.21, and then WBD is another one that I'm long shares. In the event more transpires with Para, there's been a lot going on with that as far as takeout talk. So I'm long WBD. It's a fairly cheap stock, and maybe there's eventually takeout talk in that one as well. What else you got for me, guys? What else is going on here? Here in South America, they only charge 50 cents for delivery. It's a total no-brainer. For real? 50 cents? Doesn't Costco do grocery delivery for fairly cheap, too? I feel like their delivery fee is super cheap. I don't remember what it is. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. Costco delivery. What is it? I thought it was, no, not now. I don't want you to have my location. Minimum order of $35. What do they charge? Yeah, I think it's pretty cheap, actually, compared to how many the gross amount of groceries you buy. I don't think Costco's delivery fee is too bad. What is GTN? Michael Anthony is asking me about GTN, Great Television. What is this thing? Never heard about it. Big beat, what did it have earnings today? You are one of those low dollar trading type of guys, huh? So far, on our poll here, do you order groceries for delivery? Out of the 98 votes, 81% said no. You people really are gluttons for punishment. You'd like going to the store, I guess, apparently. So it's been a quiet day here. Again, I wouldn't necessarily call what we had earlier as a sell-off. It's just low liquidity, not a whole lot happening in markets. I did contemplate earlier this morning doing the 0-day iron fly, if you will. I usually have been doing them about $15 wide. I didn't do it though, ended up leaving it alone. But this was definitely kind of a day for that, I think. Yesterday was, it would have worked out so well, except market ran at the end of the day. And usually what I look to do in those is look to see, okay, if it's around 10 a.m. Central Time, close to 10 a.m., 9:45 to 10 a.m. Central Time is where you're probably going to get the most premium. And if the market is actually sitting still near like a nice round number, near like a 5,200 or 5,150, those are the times where you probably look to employ it. I think you might get the ability to do it this week, but I don't know. Tomorrow is going to be interesting because there is a 10-year note auction. And depending on how that note auction goes, we could see move in bonds, which we could see a corresponding move in equity markets. So I wouldn't necessarily be I wouldn't clamor to necessarily jump in to do the 0-day tomorrow, just because who knows how the bond auction is going to affect the market. That comes around noon Central Time, 1 p.m. Eastern. So when that happens, you still have another 3 hours in the trading day. There's no telling what it's going to do to the markets. We'll see. Michael Anthony, which company did I say I was long? I don't know. I've said a lot of companies I was long. I mean, I was probably talking about NVO earlier when I said I was long that. But in this account, currently, I'm long CCL, short a put, the 15 put in July when stocks trading 14. Just got long some SLV today with my buddy B. Blarson, I guess. Is it B. Barlson? B. Barlson. That's what it is. B. Barlson. Yeah. I am long WBA because I'm short a put in here. I'm long CCL. So you can see these are a lot of low-hanging fruit positions. Nothing with serious expectations for vol. I mean, you know, I guess Google and GE and SMH, those are my largest positions right now. I'm probably a little bit short delta in the book, to be honest with you, just because of these positions right here. And then I got some of these longs except to sort of balance me out here. Oil obviously is not necessarily correlated to any of these other positions, really. And then WBD is just kind of a hope, wish, and a prayer. Maybe that thing gets taken out for $12. That would be pretty sweet, right? I mean, again, I bought it for $8, taken out for $12, four times. That's $400. I got 200 shares. That'd be $800. That'd be really nice. That's, you got to have stack yourself with some little nice little things every now and again in the deck, in the book, to sort of balance things out. Folks, that's the show. Thanks for watching today on this extra long edition of Engineering the Trade. I'll see you guys again on Thursday, where we're going to do the exact same thing. Extra 15 minutes, 1:30 Central to 2:15 Central. I'll see you then. As usual, stay smart, be patient, trade small, trade often.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.